Hi, and welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast. On this episode, Kelly Tennant.
I'm good with it now. I've really come to peace in terms with it. I'm very woo-woo, so she's with me all the time. I talk to her. I feel like our relationship has completely healed.
Everyone has a story. I get them to tell it. Welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast, conversations with media personalities about their lives and journeys. Thank you so much for supporting the podcast, whether it's on YouTube, Instagram, or your favorite platform, or perhaps you're watching on DBNA Television at dbnatelevision.tv, DBNA TV app on Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV. Before we get to my conversation with Kelly Tennant, a little about my story. I'm a widowed dad of two girls who just lost their mom, a grieving husband, a man in recovery trying to reconnect with the world with fresh eyes, faith, and perspective, a college journalism professor, a white guy in a world of injustice, a 20-year broadcast media veteran who had his dream job and then lost it. Nearly 2 years ago, God gave me a gift, an opportunity to stop, step back, and breathe so I could learn about love, vulnerability, forgiveness, grace, self-care, patience, and understanding. I first talked to former sports reporter turned podcaster Kelly Tennant a couple of years ago for a podcast I was doing then, and a lot has changed. She's healthy for the first time in her adult life. She's engaged and empowered. You look all tan and everything like that. Oh, where do you live now? Is it like Montana or like the Northern Territories? I can't remember.
We're just outside of Denver in Golden.
Denver, okay. Okay,
yeah, I knew it was. I'm not tan. I got a facial yesterday and basically peeled my layer of skin off. So this is how I look.
You're glowing. You have a glow.
Oh, yeah.
You have a glow. That's what that is. Okay. we're just going to get right into it. And I will leave probably all of this in, and that's okay.
That's great. That's my
okay.
Favorite.
It's good. I have to start by thanking you for introducing me to Zoom, because when we talked 2 years ago, for the podcast I was doing 2 years ago, you're like, let's talk on Zoom. I said, sure. What's Zoom? How do I get on Zoom? It took forever for the computer I was using to load Zoom to understand what all that was. And now it's like, let's Zoom it. Okay, I'll see you there. Bye. Okay,
well, I'm about to ruin your life. Don't use Zoom anymore. I have something better. It's called Riverside. No.
It's called what? Riverside?
Riverside. Yeah. We can talk about it offline if you want, but okay. It's made for podcasting. The video quality is better. It's legit.
Nice. So, all right.
Here we are again.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm so glad you didn't tell me that beforehand, because I'm like, okay, Kelly, I can't do this again. I can't take 30 minutes for it to load, but it sounds like it's probably okay. And really the pandemic has forced so many people to pivot and say, you know what? We could do a podcast on Zoom. We could do a podcast here. Let's record it and go.
Yeah, totally. I think it's a gift, right? I mean, it's so annoying for a million reasons, but there's also really cool ways that we've adjusted, and there's more opportunity to connect with people in different ways. I mean, we only did podcasts in person for years, and we missed out on a lot of opportunities because you'd either have to fly somewhere or make this whole ordeal. And now it's just so easy to pop on. And I think we're able to have more cool conversations.
Oh, for sure. And that's you have had some of the more interesting conversations I think anybody has had in the podcast space. Nothing is off limits, it seems. How did you get there mentally, spiritually, and emotionally?
Yeah. I mean, you're one of the few who knows former Kelly 1.0. and you know a lot of details about my life. So, I mean, I think for me, when I was working in sports and in the younger version of me, I kind of felt like I was living a double life, right? Where I was sick with chronic illness. So I would be at Dodger Stadium for hours working, grinding, and having to put on a happy face because you're on live television. And then I would go home and I would sleep for hours and I was in incredible pain. I couldn't see straight. I felt depressed. And it was just this back and forth. And I felt like I couldn't be honest about my life and myself. And I also felt like, and I think a lot of us do this when we're young, we're people pleasers. We're trying to live up to some standard or expectation that our parents gave us when we were five, or that our boss told us we had to achieve. And I think that I was constantly in this climbing of a ladder. Let me prove to you how good I am. And at the end of the day, I don't feel like I was really taking care of myself or fulfilling what I wanted. And so when I started my podcast and I left that you know, version of me behind, I decided I had to be honest. Like, if I am not 100% honest and showing up genuinely as me and the version of me that continues to evolve, then I'm just out of integrity. And integrity is a big thing for me. And so I just show up real raw and I'm just here. And I know a lot of people are very uncomfortable and triggered by it sometimes, but I also think that it causes people to ask questions about their own lives and where they're not being honest and where they're out of integrity. And I think that's really part of the larger picture and most important conversation you can have.
Do you remember those first episodes where you were just so raw that maybe after you were done recording, you're like, wow, I just did that. I just did that. That was really uncomfortable, but now I feel really good about it.
Yeah. You know, again, it's funny. I remember when I would be on TV and it was like a huge game and you knew hundreds of thousands of people were watching. I would forget that people were watching because all I did was talk into a camera. And so you just think, oh, I'm just talking to a camera. And then you know, you go on your phone and there's, you know, 100 DMs from people you don't know. And you're like, oh, right. People are watching this. That's kind of how I feel with the podcast. I just sit in my little dungeon office and I have my recording equipment and I say all the things and then I put it into the world. And I almost forget that there's people receiving it sometimes. And so I think there's kind of a barrier for me in a good way where I can just kind of lay it all out there and then I just let it go and I don't hold on to it. I don't know. I think I've gotten really comfortable with being honest. I also get a lot of messages from people about how it helps them. And at the end of the day, I just really want to help people and be of service to them, however that looks. And if that means that I'm telling you about my deepest, darkest secrets and how fucked up I feel about myself, and that makes you feel better, then like, I'm here for it.
At some point, you kind of flipped that switch where, yeah, you do care about other people. You may not care necessarily about what they think about you or whatnot, but are there times where you feel yourself caring a little bit too much about what they think? Or, you know, that switch gets flipped back where you're like, wow, I'm really in a place where I care more than I feel like I should about what people think.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've gotten to a really healthy place with this. And again, I'm like, Aaron, we're not talking about sports, but here we go. Sports shaped my life. And so from a very young age, I was on all of these message boards as a volleyball player and people were criticizing me and I never went on there, but my mom would always go on. So she knew all the things that all these parents were saying about me. And then I get into, you know, college and it's the same thing. And then I get into TV and it's the same thing. And then I leave TV on a very abrupt way that pissed a lot of people off. And I was literally called every bad name under the sun, people attacking me, death threats. It's like horrible stuff. And so I think that just, you know, 15, 20 years of that really allowed me to have a thick skin. And so I realized that 99.9% of these people do not know me. They don't know what's going on behind the scenes. They don't have any clue as to who I am as a person. They just know what they see and they have judgment and they project. And I just keep that in mind. And I honestly don't attract a lot of people who have much judgment of me. Most people are really supportive. And if they're not into it, they bail. They're like, I just don't follow you anymore. And that's totally okay. I think that really I've created an energy in which it's all about how can we just ask ourselves better questions and be really honest with ourselves. And so I think that even if people are judgmental, they do take pause and they say, what is it that I am seeing here? What is it that I'm getting from this? Why am I triggered by this person? And I've gotten a lot of messages from people who stopped following me or stopped engaging with my content or my podcast for a year plus. And then they come back and they said, I just wasn't ready for this. And now I'm ready to have this conversation with you and myself. And I respect that so much because I've done that too. There are people that have made me really uncomfortable or made me triggered. And I had to sit with that and be like, why is this woman making me feel bad about myself? Or why do I think she's XYZ? And it's really just something to be seen within myself.
And how did you feel like you got to that point where you're so introspective and so accepting of who you are?
A lot of therapy and psychedelics. I've spent a lot of time with plant medicine over the last couple of years, mushrooms, ayahuasca combo. And I think that really allows you to kind of sift through the noise and the chaos that so many of us are inundated with, you know, that voice in your head that tells you you're gross, you're wrong, you're bad. And I've gotten rid of that to a point where I can just hear myself. It doesn't mean that I don't have doubt and chaos come in, but I know what my own voice sounds like. I know what my internal compass feels like. And so anytime that stuff comes in, I just get really clear on, okay, why is that affecting me? Why is that coming in right now? And usually it's because I'm not taking care of myself. I'm not listening to myself. I'm going back into old patterns of people pleasing and constantly doing and just staying busy. And I think the more that I've been able to get quiet with myself and really slow down, which is part of why I moved to Denver, Colorado from LA after being there for 15 years, because you can't hear shit in LA. I got more in touch with myself and I got more connected. And I have this sense of, you know, self-confidence that I don't think I ever had before, but it really took this willingness to be quiet, to have this self-excavation, going to therapy, talking things out, being in plant medicine, where it really allows you to look within and get clear with yourself.
And you, when we talk about the idea of you just on your podcast and in your life, you're just raw, unfiltered. And when we talk about raw and unfiltered, you're talking about sex, you're talking about sexuality. And those first few episodes where you really introduced that side of you, how was that for you and your audience?
Whew, I've never gotten so many messages in my whole life. When I told people I'm bisexual, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't creepy messages like maybe some people would expect. It was all women being like, oh my God, thank you so much. You put words to the feelings I've been having for years. And that is so special, because I think that, you know, I mean, you talk for a living. I talk for a living. I think we have a way with words that it's a special skill set. It's a gift. And a lot of people don't have that. And so I think that's part of what I'm able to do is I'm able to express myself and use words and make things make sense for people. And I feel like the podcast, especially in those moments, were conversations with people who have been in my community for years. And it was like talking to a girlfriend and saying, hey, this is how I feel. This is what's coming up for me. I'm fucking scared shitless. I don't know what any of this means, but I also really feel like I need to pursue this for myself. This feels like the most open, connected version of myself. And here's why. And, you know, the response was incredible, but the relief that I felt was even better, because I felt like for months I had been tiptoeing around this thing and it didn't feel good. It felt like I was kind of lying, even though I know I don't have to tell everyone my entire life story. It just felt like I wasn't showing up as myself. And so it was this freedom of, oh, I can finally express myself. I can finally really be honest and share with people what's been coming up for me.
Did you, you talk about, you know, for months you felt like, but when you kind of tap into it, is it really years? Is it really like going back, you know, 10, 15, 20 years of your life where you're like, wow, okay, let me connect all those dots. It's not just something that's come up in the last, you know, year.
Yeah, for sure. I think that there's a couple circumstances. You have kids, right?
Yes.
You have a daughter?
Yeah. Two daughters, yeah. 6 and 8.
Yeah. So growing up, I had a lot of issues with girls and I was bullied and I was, you know, I was a really good volleyball player. So I was put up on this pedestal. And so there was a lot of competition. And I always felt like I wasn't able to really connect with women. And the friends that I did have, it seemed like a few of them really blew up. And I'm thinking of two in particular. And those two relationships came to mind when I started to realize I was having these feelings for women. I think that I was almost in love with both of these girls, but I didn't understand it and I didn't know how to express it. And so there was this constant tension and then I would just cut it off and I'd be like, you can't be in my life. And I think it was a protective mechanism for a young girl to say, I don't know what I'm feeling. This feels really scary. All I know is I can't handle it. You got to go. And so I think those are things that I've been able to look at and say, oh, that makes more sense now. Of course, I was so emotionally involved and overwhelmed by this whole thing. So yeah, I think those are a few of the things that came up. And I think that I was attracted to women to a degree, but I think it was more of me being willing to be open in all aspects of my life. How can I just be honest and allow myself to pursue any sort of desire or pleasure that I want? And even if it's being held and being in relationship with a woman without sex involved, right? That, that level of intimacy that I never understood, that I never experienced, I think that's so much of what I was longing for. And since I came out and since I've been with women, it has been so healing. I feel like I have healed years and years of relationship wounding with women by being with them as an adult. And it's so interesting because that's not something I would have anticipated.
Has there been something, you know, as you, you know, you're trying mushrooms, you're in therapy, you're pushing your own boundaries, and not just pushing them, you're like jumping over them, obliterating them and everything. Has there been something that, I wouldn't say backfired, but when you tried it or when you got there, you're like, nah, it's not for me?
Oh God. Yeah. So I move at the speed of a freight train, and I have only known one speed my entire life. And this has been an amazing lesson in slowing down, because I am, on top of that, I'm also very black or white. I'm like, it's either this way or this way, and we're going to do 110%. And, you know, it's the achiever in me. I'm like, I'm going to be the best bisexual there ever was. And I'm like, who gives out gold stars for this? Apparently me. So I think that I just went too far too fast, and I overwhelmed my nervous system. And I finally got to a point where I was just kind of breaking down, and I'm like, I physically cannot handle this, let alone emotionally. It's starting to just be super overwhelming and I can't function. And so I really had to take a step back and slow down and take more baby steps, because when you start to embark on this journey for yourself, and I really do think it's in anything that's new and outside of the box, you don't, this is the best advice I ever got, you don't want to chug from the water bottle, you want to sip from it, because you want to set yourself up for success. Well, I've always been a chugger, and that's how I operate. And so it was this rewiring of my own patterns and belief systems and operating systems in order to set myself up for success. And I think that was just the most important thing, was to have conversations with myself and with my partner around, okay, this is too overwhelming. We're talking about doing this thing, and I'm having a visceral response to this right now, and it's just too much. Maybe it's not a no forever, but it's a no for right now. And that allowed me to understand boundaries and what is it that I want? And maybe it's a yes right now, and tomorrow it's a no, and being okay with that. But yeah, there, I've been in a few scenarios where I'm like, I really should not have said yes to this. But I wanted to try it because I was just so excited and I wanted to go all in.
Yeah. You don't know where that line is until you try to see it, try to go up to it, try to cross it. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that you mentioned right there is so key. The idea of, you know what? I tried it. I didn't like it, or it didn't work for me. I'm okay with that. That is so huge, where it's, I'm not a failure, you know, and whatever I just tried, so what, it didn't work. It could work tomorrow. It could work next year, or it could never work. And I'm cool with that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the interesting thing that has come up too, is I've done things and I've liked them, but then I've panicked because I've liked them, because you're not supposed to like them.
Right.
And so then I go down that spiral.
It's so ingrained deep within you that until you try it, you're like, wait a minute. No, I'm not supposed to like this. This is not supposed to be me.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like you have a no, that's an actual no, like this doesn't feel good. And then you have a no that's, oh, that felt good, but I'm not supposed to do that. So now I'm having a panic attack.
How do you really navigate that?
Yeah. I mean, it's such a good question. I think Connor and I have gotten into this really, I don't know if it's healthy, but interesting routine where I do something, I like it, but then I freak out that I like it. And so then I'm like being crazy with him. And then he just lets me get out all my crazy, and I talk about it and I cry and I do the whole thing. And then I come back to him, you know, 5 days later, I'm like, okay, so this is how I'm feeling. I think that I really like this. And he's like, yeah, I know. And he just lets me kind of have my moment. And I think you have to do that. You have to just allow yourself to process it. I have to let go of the voice in my head of my parents telling me that I'm wrong or gross. You're not supposed to do that. And I have to feel that, because that's just like a part of the human experience. But then once I do, and I let that come up and out, then I can get clear again on my own voice, which says, you're safe. This feels good. You're allowed to explore this. This is, you know, the freedom and the play and the pleasure that you want more of in your life. You don't have to keep yourself from this just because it's a little scary.
you brought up Connor and you brought up your parents. We'll talk about Connor in a few minutes because I feel like we're going to spend a few minutes talking about him, talking about your relationship. But how are things with your family? How have they accepted Kelly 2.0, 4.0, whatever Kelly you're on at this point? Because we already talked about Kelly 1.0.
Yeah. So my mom died last summer and I never had a chance to have a conversation with her about this. It just, we were in a really interesting place in our relationship and it just never presented itself. So I never got to talk to her about it. And I think she knew though.
Before you, I was going to say, do you feel like you were at least in a good place with each other? Not necessarily that she's, you know, she knows Kelly 2.0, but that you were at a place where it's like, okay, we're good.
No.
Oh man.
We weren't. Yeah, it was really sad. It was really sad. I'm good with it now. I've really come to peace in terms with it. You know, I'm very woo-woo, so she's with me all the time. Yeah. I talked to her. I feel like our relationship has completely healed and I feel like we understand each other now, and she's such an important presence in my life, and I also understand now, you know, I'm 33. You don't understand things when you're 15 and 21 and 25 about your parents. And I do think sometimes it takes them dying for you to have more perspective and understand why they did some of the things they did. And so I do now. And so I've just been able to let that go, but it was definitely a very painful process as it was happening. Yeah, and I also it was hard to feel like I couldn't fully be myself or express myself. But that was also a learning experience for me because I think I created that barrier too. I don't know what would have happened if I had gone to her and been like, hey, this is me, this is what I'm doing. She could have been totally accepting, but I kept myself from having that moment. So, you know, lesson learned. I still haven't talked to my dad about this. I mean, I know he knows, he has listened to my show, he follows my stuff. But my dad is such an angel and he's like, I just want you to be happy, whatever it is. He's always said that my whole life. So I know that when I did come out, right before I did my podcast coming out, I called my younger brother and I was so scared. I was shaking. I wanted to throw up. I could barely get the words out. And I finally said to him, I said, Steven, you know, I'm interested in women. I think I'm bisexual. And he started laughing. He's like, is this why you're freaking out? And I said, yeah. And he's like, why? Like, what did you think I was going to do? And I'm like, I don't know. Blah, blah, blah. And he said something incredibly vulgar and amazing. And it made me laugh very hard through my tears. And he was just like, dude, whatever. I don't care. Like, as long as you're happy, that's all that matters to me. So my family has been so great. And, you know, with whatever knowledge they do have, and I feel supported.
When do you feel like you will talk with your dad about it?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe at my wedding. That's the next time I know I'm seeing him. No, I don't know. I'm sure it'll come up. We've, since my mom got sick, cause she got sick in January of last year and then she died pretty quickly. Like we started having very vulnerable conversations, unlike any we had ever had. Cause you're kind of forced into it, you know? And So I think that it'll happen, in the next, you know, 6 months, year. Because I do want him to know about like what I'm doing and how I live my life. And, not that I need his approval, but I think it's just an important thing. And I think it would set me free in a way, because I do feel like I'm still holding a part of myself back. And I know that he's not going to be judgmental. It's just, that's a hard conversation to have with your dad. And like, hey dad, I hook up with girls sometimes. I don't know. I just never thought those words would come out of my mouth.
All right. Go ahead and send that to dad.
Yeah, just exactly.
Clip that and email like, it. All right.
Need to listen to this show.
Yeah, we talked about it on the podcast before, the idea of our parents' origin stories. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that I really thought about my own parents' origin stories until my late 30s and early 40s. I'm 44 now. And you talk about you're 33 and we really just don't know what our parents have been through because we don't talk with them about that. You know,
yeah.
And to know what our parents have been through and why they were the way they were with us it's groundbreaking mentally, spiritually, and emotionally.
It is. And it's kind of what I was saying too. We don't have the capacity as a 10-year-old, a 20-year-old to really hold that. But I think now that I've been in this space and I have a better understanding of people, I have a lot more compassion in my heart. I am able to see the child in my parents, like the wounded child. My mom had a very abusive father. I remember she told me she like had to go after him with a bat when she was 8 years old, because he was about to go after my grandmother. Just that's how she grew up. She was a butcher starting at 9 years old, helping make money. She just never felt good enough. And she carried that her whole life. And my mom didn't have the capacity or the resources the way I do to have therapy once a week, to do plant medicine, to have a supportive family and friends to hold you in hard times. She never had any of that. And so I respect how much she was able to do despite how horribly abused and just really kind of abandoned in a lot of ways she was. And it helps me understand that she was just trying to protect herself as an adult, as a 6-year-old woman was still protecting that 8-year-old little girl within her. And she had a lot of anger and rage, which I can only imagine was far worse than I ever even experienced from her. So yeah, you're right. We're all people. And I don't think, you know, I'm trying to get pregnant in the next year, and I think about how much perspective I'm going to have when I become a parent and realize that we're all just figuring it out. I'm sure you feel the same way. You have two little girls and you're probably still, you know, coming up with ideas of how you're supposed to parent, because how are you supposed to do it? You're just a person too. You're just doing your best. And I think we have unrealistic expectations of people just because they're our parents. And it's like, they're also people figuring out their shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when my wife passed away in November, you know, and I've said this on the podcast before, like the better person in this relationship died that day. And, you know, sometimes I just try to hold my shit together.
I'm so sorry.
You know, 'cause I got my own shit to work on, a lot of it. And she was just, you know, so good, just like inherently good. And like, I don't really know much about her origin story. You know, she's got two younger sisters, one of whom has moved into the house with us with her family to help out. And, you know, my girls call her, you know, she's their godmother. So Ninang, but also extra mommy, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, I know that I can never replace my wife. I can never replace their mommy. And they will never get from anyone what they would have gotten from her. And just the amount of pressure on all of us to, you know, provide for them. You know, I'm not talking finances, you know, just provide the amount of love that they would have gotten from her. It's, I mean, the pressure is immense.
Mm.
Oh. Tissues are like out of reach.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, with the little that I know, your girls are so lucky to have someone who loves them the way you do and is emotionally available in that way. And I'm so sorry that you guys are all going through this.
Well, it's, I mean, and the thing is, like, this me, you know, was brought out last year by my wife. You know, we learned in January of last year that her cancer had returned, and I think it flipped a switch within her that, despite all the pain that I had caused her, despite all the pain of the cancer, and all the treatments that go along with that, she looked at it as like, okay, I don't know how many months or years I have left, but we're gonna break you down and build you up so that you can provide for my daughters. You know, wow. That's pretty much what she did. She spent the next 10 months, 11 months, just teaching me how to be just a better person, a better husband, a better father, to where by the time she passed away, we were in a really good place.
Wow. You know,
the best place, because we were, communicating like we'd never had before. And we were on the same page, you know?
What hurdles do you feel like you had to get through personally to become that man now?
Oh, I mean, just you brought it up a couple minutes ago, the emotional availability. You know, I've cried more since November than in the previous 43 years of my life, because I understand now the, you know, why I was emotionally stunted and emotionally closed off. I would just swallow everything because of my experiences as a child. I mean, I kept saying, you know, I dealt with anxiety since I was, you know, for like 30 years, you know, since I was a teenager. And then I started thinking about it. So like, well, no, my parents divorced when I was about 10. So whatever environment was being presented there, that's anxiety causing, you know. And then we go back to even younger than that. You know, I was in a household that where there was an alcoholic, you know, and so it's just like, no, I've dealt with anxiety before I was even born.
Yeah.
And my anxiety died when my wife died, because anxiety is all about worrying about the future and, you know, what can I control? And if you can't even control your wife, your partner, not leaving you, not dying, not getting cancer, then what else would you want to control? Mm-hmm. What else is there? There's, you know, I want my daughters to have, you know, I want my daughters to have their mommy. And if I can't even do that, then what am I trying to control? Yeah. So I do what I can do. I plan for, you know, I do what I do today, and I plan for tomorrow. Sure. But I give the rest to God, and you know, what comes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's death is such an incredible teacher. And I had my grandmother passed away when I was 21, and we were really close, but it was different. You know?
Expect that of a grandparent.
Yeah. She's in her 70s, but your wife and my mom was relatively young, and we lost our puppy in an accident a few months after my mom died. And so it was just, you know, you're sitting in grief. Yeah. You're just sitting in it. And what grief brings up within you is mind blowing. Nothing. I don't think in, you know, my limited capacity, I guess, I don't think anything can bring things up the way grief does, the way loss does in that way. It asks so much of you in terms of clearing the bullshit. And like you said, what is anxiety? Where did it come from? And does it even matter? Like, am I using it? Like, what's the point? What do I actually have control over? What do I want more of in my life? Grief asks us to ask those questions and to be really honest, because it almost takes you being pushed into that corner so hard and you feeling completely powerless and helpless to get to that point where you really have that reckoning and coming to terms.
And I don't ever want to say that I feel joy in the grief. I wouldn't describe it that way, but the feeling I get when I actually feel sadness, when I let myself grieve and I let myself feel sadness and feel loss, that in itself is such an empowering feeling. Mm-hmm. Because I've never felt that before, ever. Because I've never let myself feel before.
Right.
You know, I thought I felt joy before, but no, I clearly wasn't. It was just muted. Everything was just muted. And now I feel all the feels.
Yeah.
And I
think that I think of it as its actual container. I'm a visual person. If you think of this container, the container expands, and what you're able to hold, your capacity for feeling, when you feel that level of grief and sadness and you allow yourself to go there, it also expands on the other side. Yes. It expands your level of ability to feel joy and pleasure and happiness and fulfillment. But we can't know that level of joy and happiness without going to that level of grief and sadness. And I think that's the piece that people miss. You want to feel this like ecstasy and amazingness. Well, you can't get there until you actually get into that darkness, get into that pain, and then you fucking blow open. That's what it feels like. And it's really uncomfortable a lot of the time, but it also allows you to have everything you ever wanted.
You brought up Connor. Okay. Now you're all about female empowerment. You are all about, you know, owning yourself as a woman, exploring yourself as a woman. And I bring that up, and that's awesome and amazing. And, you know, I love that. But at the same time, you've got a partner who is so supportive of that and encouraging all of that exploration. You just talked about how he just kind of lays out and lets you be who you are for 5 days. Yeah. You know, I bring all that up because you've got all this female empowerment, but you're doing it with a man by your side, you know?
Yeah.
How do you strike that balance where it's like, wait a minute, is this all me or am I doing this because Connor is helping me? Would I have been able to do this without him or without somebody by my side?
Yeah, this is a great question. I don't know because I am doing it with him.
Because you've got somebody pushing you where maybe, or maybe not even pushing you, but just saying that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, somebody in your ear saying that is okay. And it's not just the little voice in your head that you've been trained to suppress and put back in that container.
Yeah. You know, I had come out of a really tumultuous relationship and ending. I had an abortion right before I met Connor and ended that relationship and was in a really hard place, but it was also my catalyst to get into personal development and growth and my spiritual awakening, if you want to call it that. I was in such a low, dark place. I started to look at why am I living like this and what do I actually want? And I did a lot of journaling and a lot of honest conversations with myself. And it was right before I met Connor and started talking to him that I was going to do ayahuasca for the first time. And I remember feeling like I've done a lot of work with myself, but I feel like I keep hitting a wall. And I know there's something on the other side of this wall, but I need something to help get me over it. And so I went and did ayahuasca, and it was one of the most incredible experiences of my life. And started talking to Connor after that. And he was the perfect complement to what I had already started. And he expanded me and made me feel safe. He made me feel like I wasn't crazy. And he really was a catalyst to, I think, expand my capacity to grow. And Connor is very different than me. Connor is kind of wild. The least structured human I've ever met. He's all over the place. And he just like will go do shit on a whim. And anyone who knows me, that is not how I've lived my life. Like type A perfectionist Kelly Tennant. So I knew I wanted more wildness and freedom and play in my life. I wanted to laugh more. I wanted to relax. And I feel like I chose him because I knew what was possible in this dynamic. I could do all of this on my own. I could, you know, do plant medicine and read the books and blah, blah, blah. But I have the perfect mirror living in my house with me to hold me accountable, to call me out, to hold me when I'm feeling broken. And I think that it just shows me more of myself on a regular basis so that I can continually see myself more clearly, call myself out, and then move forward. So yeah, I think I could do it on my own. I know I can, but I love that I get to do it with him because I also do this for him in what he needs. And so it's this amazing partnership where we get to mirror each other and trigger the shit out of each other and want to smack each other sometimes. And it builds so much intimacy and love because of that. And I know that we are much better people and the most expanded versions of ourselves because of that dynamic.
Tell me about getting engaged on the rocks at the ocean.
Yeah, Connor surprised the crap out of me. So we've known we wanted to get married almost since we met. And we really want to get pregnant. We have to do IVF because he was born without vas deferens, so he can't get me pregnant naturally. So we have been on this IVF journey, meeting with doctors, all these things for the last year. And I'm like, yo, bro, you're about to be 35. I'm about to be 34. We got to get cracking here. And so it was either get married now, which we're getting married in October, or wait until 2023 because I don't want to be breastfeeding at my own wedding. So we decided to get married now. But I didn't know that he was going to do it in Hawaii. Connor is also the guy that will never do what you expect. He will always just surprise you. And you're like, really? But he did the most cliche thing by proposing to me in Hawaii. And he did it on purpose because he knew that I would never expect him to do a cliche thing by getting proposed to in Hawaii on some rocks like Little Mermaid. And so he carried this ring around for a week and a half in his little fanny pack while he was hunting with my brother on another island, while we were going out to all these different sites. And he had designed the ring like 5 months before and had been working on it this whole time. And he walked me out onto these rocks and he was singing Aladdin to me. It was very weird. And he just
got his, like, Disney movies mixed up.
Yeah, he's like trying to keep me distracted because he was trying to pull the ring out of his pocket but also not drop it in the ocean.
Yeah, please don't drop it in the ocean.
Yeah, from behind. And then I just see a shiny ring in front of my face, and I turn around and he's down on one knee, and I was just so shocked. It's so funny, but it was perfect.
It's like you the strong woman, she's empowered, she's just, and then boom, melts, just yes. Like total girly girl. And again, I'm okay with that. You say, you know what, those were my emotions at that time. I'm going to own them.
Yeah. I mean, we're just multifaceted people. I think that's really what I've learned in this whole experience is that we have so many layers to ourselves and we don't have to contain ourselves to one part. I think that's what I did so long. I was Kelly Tennant, the volleyball player. Then I was Kelly Tennant, the TV host. And we wrap ourselves so deeply in these identities of I'm only allowed to be this way. And I think that's why I felt so suppressed for so long, is I couldn't let anything else out about me because I wanted to portray what everyone knew me as. And the more you get to know yourself and you ask yourself these questions and you try new things, you're like, oh, I like that and that. I can have both, and there's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah. And I think also just the way that media has evolved in the last few years, especially the last 1 to 2 years, pandemic or otherwise, has really allowed you to have your own platform, not worry about like, oh, I'm going to get a memo from the boss. It's like, no, I am the boss. There's not going to be a memo. This is me.
Yeah. Well, I remember interviewing players and they, once you had social media and they could control their own narrative and they could tell their own story, well, why are they going to want to talk to reporters who a lot of times are going to fucking flip the script and tell something that's maybe not true, or, you know, exaggerate something? Of course, we all want to be in control of our own narrative. We want to be in control of how the world sees us. We don't want it to go through 7 filters and channels until it gets to other people.
How have you kind of embraced this new media? Because like a couple of years ago when I was doing the podcast, it was audio only. Mm-hmm. I had no interest in video. You know, a lot of it was in person, which meant I needed at least 2 video cameras if I wanted, you know, a decently shot conversation. But it's now you've got to be everywhere if you really want to make an impact, if you really want to, you know, create this footprint where people can actually find you. You know, it's not just podcasts. It's got to be video. It's got to be this and that. How have you embraced the new media?
I mean, I created my own production company.
So fun.
Yeah. We started our media company a year and a half ago because of exactly what you're talking about. I, for so long, had to answer to, you know, 7 different bosses. I had Lakers bosses, Dodgers bosses, and then my own TV network bosses. And so everyone else was telling me what to say and what to talk about, which is fine because that's like how it works. But I wanted to talk about a lot of things that had nothing to do with sports, but that was my job. So when I started the podcast, I started to see how I could storytell on my own, how I could create an entire production, the back end, be on camera, do all the things, and really just have your hands in the dirt, really being in the nitty gritty, not just being the face on camera who's reading from a teleprompter that was often written for you. And it felt really good to be that creative and have to come up with new ideas and concepts. And I think that's what we're seeing, whether it's on social media and TikTok and Reels, where, oh my God, people are so creative. I am mind blown. I can't do these dances. Yeah. It is so embarrassing. Like, I'm sure if you tried to do those dances, your daughters would be like, Dad, please don't.
Yeah, please stop. Just
right? But I'm amazed at how creative people are. And then you add in podcasting and the way people are teaching and reaching their communities. We have almost 40 shows at Soulfire that we produce. And so many of our hosts are so creative, the way they connect with their audiences, the way they are putting on courses and masterminds and one-on-ones and teaching about really important topics. And I just think that it's really special to be able to have your hand in every part of it and reach people in such a genuine way. And on the flip side, I think that it can be incredibly toxic and overwhelming and overstimulating for so many of us. There has to be boundaries with it, right? It's, you can create all these things, you can connect with your community, but it can't be where you live because it's not real life oftentimes. And I think we get very caught up in the scroll and the comparison. And I mean, suicide rates are up so high with children, especially, and the comparison and the eating disorders. And that's where it gets really scary. But I do think as a medium, especially in podcasting, to be able to have these important conversations that we otherwise have never had access to before 10, 15 years ago, I mean, it's changed the world. It changed my life before I was ever a podcaster. And I think that it is really powerful. I think you just have to go about it with boundaries and awareness as to what's going on.
You talk about using your voice and you know, sending a message. You are very vocal about vaccines and about the pandemic. Do you want to talk about that here, or do we want to direct people to your podcast and your Instagram? How do you want to handle that?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk about it. Connor is very vocal about this. His podcast, Politically Homeless, he really tries to cover both sides so that people have all of the information and are educated. And so that's obviously so much of where I get my stuff, and I'm, you know, having these conversations with him. I am not anti-vax. He and I have talked about this. We do feel at this point, we don't have kids yet, but we do feel that we will vaccinate our children, but not all of that, all of the vaccines and on a schedule. And so I say that because I want to be really clear. I am not against vaccines. I think they do save lives. At the same point, I am also someone who has dealt with Western medicine, and I understand how the health system works. And I am not okay with what we allow in our food, in our products, in our vaccinations. And a lot of the health system is just so broken. And I think that we are pumping people full of toxins and things we don't know enough about. And I think Big Pharma runs this country. And if you follow the money, that is what you're going to see. And so I believe that everyone should have their choice. I have plenty of friends who are vaccinated. I am not mad at them. I don't think ill of them. They did that for their own purposes, their feeling of safety, their beliefs. And I'm totally fine with that. I don't think that I should have to get something because you tell me I have to get it. So that's kind of where I am. And I know that it can be very controversial and very difficult for people. I know it's rifting, you know, apart families and friendships and all of that. I just really believe in freedom, period. Whatever that looks like.
Do you feel like you got more messages, just the engagement from your coming out as bisexual or your even talking about vaccines?
Bisexual. Yeah.
Really interesting. Okay. I expected it to be the other way around, but okay.
Yeah. I've had a few people come at me pretty hard about posting about being anti-vax and all of this stuff. And when people come to me and I feel like I'm going to be talking to a wall, I just don't engage. I've had a lot of amazing conversations with people who are like, hey, I see your point. I actually read the article you posted. Here is one that is a counterpoint. I think it'd be interesting to you. And I read it and I'm like, yeah, that is interesting. And it does make me think. I don't want to be in an echo chamber. And Connor and I talk about this a lot. We don't want to just surround ourselves with people that agree with us. Connor watches Fox News every day. We don't agree with 90% of what is on Fox News, but it's important to hear what everyone is talking about so that you can educate yourself. If you only listen to the same person every day, that's how you're going to view the world. It's kind of like when you live with your parents and then you go to college and you're like, wait, it's not always like this. What the fuck? It's, you know, it's expanding your view of the world. And so I think you just have to have a lot of conversations, educate yourself, read different types of articles, and just be open to conversation.
How is your health now? We talked a couple of years ago. You were still, I think, in recovery from the chronic illness that it took you years and years and years to diagnose. How are you doing now?
I'm perfect. I have no problems.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, I healed in about a year and a half.
That's once the Instagram reel and YouTube short where it's just Kelly, I'm perfect and I have no problems. I'm perfect and I have no problems. I'm just going to loop it for a good 35 seconds. Let me check my analytics and see what really engages people.
Oh my God, please do that. Yeah, no, I was sick for 14 years. And then once I was properly diagnosed, it took me a year and a half and I have not had one symptom since.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Oh, I love that.
Thank you.
I love that.
Me too.
How can people find you? Where do you, because you, again, you talk about Soulfire Productions. You have your own show. I think you and Connor just recently started your own show together. So where would you like people to go?
Yes. So Okay Babe is the podcast Connor and I have together, and it's all relationships with a little bit of politics because I can't keep him from going on a rant. And then my show is called The Kelly Show. And then you can find me at kellytennant.com. I'm at Kelly M. Tennant on Instagram, and then soulfireproductionsco.com for all your podcasting needs.
I'm so thankful and honored that you came on the podcast. You know, you don't share your space and energy and time with everybody. And so the idea that I think within 3 minutes of my asking you to come on the podcast, you're like, of course, let's do it. What am I going to do?
I've always liked you, Aaron, and I really respect you. And I just want to thank you for being so vulnerable with me and everything you shared. And I wish your family so much love.
You can watch this episode on YouTube and DBNA TV, also IGTV. Follow the Aaron Bender podcast on your favorite platforms and link to it at aaronbender.com. It's also where you can find all my social media. If you have guest ideas or comments, email me, aaronbendermedia@gmail.com. Be well, and thanks for listening.